Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Platypus, the extraordinary story of how a curious creature baffled the world by Anne Morrell. This is episode 9. We've had two review episodes where I've talked variously. I really have to struck my head to what the first review was. But the second review is definitely about the milk of a platypus. And this is in general why I'm doing this reading, is to exercise my mind, get myself reading, podcasting, mentally active. And we're up to chapter 12. We've had the white fascination, the insult to white sensibility, and then the insult to sensibility, and we've become more sensible. You'd probably say that the scientist Cordwell is our first European scientist to come out here, and he has identified the platypus as having a reptilian egg-laying manner, which is quite a fascinating thing to have a look at. And so I've done a review of that. I really have to go back and struggle to scratch my head what the first review was about the platypus. Here's this chapter. It's called The New Man, and a quote from Grant Elton Smith on the fraternity of Ducklemoy in 1997. You have so many pretty things to show and so much to say that people in England would like to hear. What William Cordwell's discovery held the new importance of embryology as scientific research. The study of the embryo or ova before the offspring's birth was emerging as a crucial scientific field. Lecturing on it at Cambridge, Cordwell's professor, F.M. Balfour, he's the person who died and left his money to his student, had pushed the subject forward on a treatise of comparative embryology published shortly before his early death. And the discipline gained ground in Britain and USA. Darwin, too, had commenced it as an aid to determining lines of descendant of common progenitor. It's really interesting that human embryos have a stage where we appear to have gills. Cordwell, an inheritor of both the study of Darwin's view, was uniquely placed, to carry discipline forward, but praised in biological circles on his return to England, the young virtuoso delivered his introductory paper on embryology of Monotrema and Marsupia to the Royal Society of London and promptly joined the brain drain. He abandoned his scientific career to become a successful paper manufacturer in Scotland and drifted off the scientific page. He was, of course, well aware of just how much at the edge of knowledge his remarkable discoveries were. Years, he rightly predicted, would elapse before the details of the development of the platypus and echidna could be extended and interpreted. Now, that's the platypus was the egg-laying mammal was now accepted, although the Illustrated London magazine was still blithely referring to it as the egg-laying myth in its columns in 1886. Writing Cordwell's message to Montreal, Professor Moseley thought the platypus evoked a reptilian ancestor, but its descendants remained obscure. Writing his mammalian descent a year after Cordwell's revelation, the vertebrate authority, Professor W.K. Parker, allowed that he was still at a loss of how to deal with this complex animal. Quote, "Here is a beast, a primary kind of beast, whose general structure puts it somewhere on the same level as low reptiles and odd sorts of birds, but in which there are characters much more archaic than anything seen in serpents, lizards, tortoises, crocodiles, and emus. Therefore, the existing reptiles, birds, must stand aside as having nothing to do with the family tree of the Monotremes, although, in some things, they are like these beasts, and many of their organs are formed in a similar pattern. They are all equally below the morphological level of other nobler mammalia." So this is, 100 years after the science has moved away from this type of writing. It's pretty amazing. "But science is the product of many players, of untitled Untied Ends and New Beginnings. Oh, she's a beautiful. Isn't Amaryl a beautiful author? The torch flung down by Cudwell would shortly be taken up by others. For even as Cudwell brought together his descriptive paper for the Lyons Royal Society in early 1887, one such student from the Medical School of Edinburgh University, another Scot, James Thomas Wilson, was on his way to take up a demonstrator's post in anatomy in the new medical school at the University of Sydney. Wilson was 27, a mere 8 years younger than the university itself. Within 3 years, arriving too fast to become the first Chalet Professor of Anatomy, the large and forthright Jumi, this is quote, was well placed to gather around him a small circle of talented young biologists to join him in the important Australian research. These men were a new breed, Darwinians all. Wilson, so you remember that previously we all poo-pooed Darwin because we were sort of these Aussies, the early Aussies, colonial Aussies, were transfixed by the greatness of empire, which Owen, Richard, I think Richard Owen, I forgot what his name, or James Owen, I can't really remember, Owen, who was a creationist, put. Okay. Wilson himself trained in anatomy and embryology. Young J.P. Peter Hill, I'm Peter Hill, a student from the Royal College of Science in London, physiologist and pathologist Charles Martin, a former lecturer in anatomy at King's College London, all were professional scientists making their way to high places via posts in Australian colonies. Which is interesting that back then there were no, when the platypus was discovered, there were no scientists. The triumphant drew in outstanding local medical graduate, Grattan Elliot Smith, and were soon ready to make the indigenous fauna the research arena and fit for those most curious species, the monotremes and marsupials, into the genealogical tree of life. Cudwell had determined one fact. There were countless more to be discovered. His 1887-89 papers had fueled Wilson's interest, but Wilson, like others who followed, found that the material collected by Cudwell and his scientific exposition was disappointing. I must admit, I do find it disappointing, and as I said, reading the other paper, I found that disappointing. Trained in histology, the study of tissue and microscopy, the very instruments now at the command of embryologists, which Cudwell, a disparting figure, had extolled, Wilson and his colleagues would shift the centre of monitoring research to Australia, moving casually about the countryside in their free time from teaching. They took a monk here, the fraternity of Duckamoloy. Oh, there you go. That's what they called themselves. From their favourite hunting ground for the platypus and the gum tree fringed Duckamoloy River, which flows inland side of the Great Dividing Range near Oberon, New South Wales. Using specimens captured on its banks and from the rivers running on the coastal side to the range, they bent their individual and collective minds to amassing a spread of knowledge about the physiology of the platypus. Their research probed the duckbill snout, the reptilian shoulder girdle, whatever that means, the skull and the brain, dumbbell-shaped bone, or the os paroxysm of the skull, the bony nodule that furnished the embryonic team with a shell breaker. Wow! And the hind sperm of the male. So they've got a dumbbell-shaped bone in the skull. Wow! And built an understanding of neurology, morphology, evolution, psychology, physiology of monotremes. For all their energy and enthusiasm, the platypus hunting proved a daunting task. As their predecessors knew, the animals are hard to find. There's also evidence that the fur hunters had reduced the numbers in New South Wales, so it's now illegal to do it. Again and again, the animals' amazing construction skills defied the fraternity. Their sorties on long labyrinth burrows built some 30 to 46 centimetres below the ground and up to 18 metres long were securely plugged at both ends to conceal the nesting chamber. often yielded no reward than a companionable evening spent around the campfire on the chilly August and September nights. Wilson and Hill usually, that's Peter Hill, usually captured up to 6 males every female, but in 1894, 4 female platypuses were shot at Wellington, 3 having just laid their eggs and the 4th with 2 eggs in her uterus ready to be laid. The following year, the 2 men used the colony's Leanne Society Journal to publish the first precise description of the structure of the platypus embryo and the fecal membranes. It became a foundation paper in the field. Wilson and Hill would concentrate their efforts on this new exciting area of research. With a dozen suitable specimens finally at their disposal, they turned to the technology of the microscope and the skills of embryology dissection and reconstruction to reveal the composition of the developing platypus eggs. After Caldwell's lucky chance discovery of 1 egg and another female's passage about to be laid, this gestation period the platypus was still unknown. With hard-won eggs now available from detailed embryological scrutiny, the researchers set out to make a delicate slide sections of the eggs in various stages of development. The intricate work brought results. Working across the years 1902 to 1906, so they've been working for 10 or more years on this, traced the stages of the development of the yolk and membrane to the point where the egg was about to be laid. Their findings were explicit. The exclusive platypus eggs proved both similar to the distinct and distinct from that of birds. The platypus ovum began at the time of fertilization as a small yellow sphere about 3 millimeters in diameter. Fertilized, it became surrounded by a very thin layer of albumin. That's white egg. So that's a globular protein. I really like this. And albumin is actually your blood plasma. You have egg white in your blood plasma. And outside this, a thin transparent parchment-like shell. In birds, the albumin is deposited in several layers in which the yolk is suspended in the middle of the egg. Membranes attach the yolk to a rigid cartilaginous shell. The difference between the eggs of birds and that of the monotreme, Wilson Hill discovered, was the bird, the shell it was deposited around a fully formed egg, and there was no increase in the size during the growth of the embryo. But the platypus and the echidna, the eggshell increased in size and altered in structure along the spine or axis of the embryo growing in its intrauterine development. Oh, that's interesting. Thin eggshell stretched and thickened from an initial 4 millimeters in diameter to a spherical size to some 10 millimeters. You could expand to a maximum of 16 to 18 millimeters in length and 14 to 15 millimeters in width by the time it was being laid. Only the monotremes shared this distinctive pattern of growth. Why? The researchers' answers laid in the fact that there was insufficient nutrient in the yolk mass to fertilize ovum to produce the young platypus. The fetus was thus nourished by nutrient flowing to it from the uterine wall. Its enlarged egg progressively disrupted and liquefied the yolk. Isn't that amazing? So it's almost an egg, but it's on the road to being a placenta. Wilson and Hill's conclusion broke new ground. In the earliest stages of the development of the platypus, their findings ran was similar to metroblastic yolk-filled ova of reptiles and birds. However, nourishment of the embryo inside the egg from the uterine wall was a mammalian feature and did not occur in birds and reptiles. The Australian jury they believed, discovered the link between reptiles and mammals and the origin of mammals. Their research dazzled biologists around the world. By 1903, their careful observations were judged in Britain, quote, the acme of platypus work. In 1905, on sabbatical leave in Europe and Britain, Wilson displayed revealing stereophotographs of the embryological material of the platypus development and monitoring reproduction at the first international congress of anatomists in Geneva. They had, as Wilson's biographer notes, become the foremost authority on mammotremes. The work of Wilson and Hill, conducted on the platypus brain, was also far-reaching. By examining early neural development in the embryo, they found that the platypus brain is not formed in 3 parts like other mammals, but 2, a hind part and a fore part. So you've got the the hindbrain, the cerebellum, and the I've got to go and learn that again. Isn't that depressing? Get the hindbrain, the bellum, parrot, and crate. It's gone. I'm going to have to relearn that. Bloody hell. Shit. I hate that, having to relearn everything. What are the parts of the brain? The cerebellum. No, the cerebral cortex. And the cerebellum. And hindbrain. So three parts. They also identified an enormous growth of cells relative to the rest of the neural system on each side of the flat forebrain, which was found to be contiguous with the brain. Charles Martin and Grafton Elliott Smith added other discoveries. Lecturing at Sydney University, later in Melbourne University, Martin conducted definitive work on the heat regulating mechanisms of monitoring and researched the spur of the male platypus hind limbs. This feature, a subject that had engagement, and this is interesting, they have a different body temperature from mammals. These features are subject that engaged Ben Owen Gould and many a bush settler. He concluded transmitted poison secretion from the duct of the femoral gland, but was only used in so peaceable animal as a weapon against other males during the mating season. The brilliant young Elliot centered research on the platypus's brain in a study which, extending wildly to marsupials, reptiles and other mammals, propelled him to distinguish career as a leading neuroanatomist in Egypt and Britain. Hill, attracting international recognition for his innovative work, left Sydney in 1906 to take up successive chairs of zoology and comparative anatomy in London, where he continued, and it's interesting that, so my grandfather was Catholic in the same era, and he didn't have the same opportunities given to him. Anatomy in London, where he continued intensive study of monitoring eggs development until well after his retirement in 1938. During the 1930s, he collaborated with a former student, Thomas Flynn, appointed to the chair of biologists in Belfast, who had arrived in London with a rich collection of monitoring eggs and embryos. The detailed research shed further light on the development of the monitoring egg and bridges the gap between reptilian and avian development. Hill's continuous work to establish that monotremes, marsupials and placental animals, such as the cat, marked specific evolutionary stages through which the higher mammals must have passed. It won him the Royal Society's High Award from the Darwin Medal. Isn't that beautiful? Darwin clarified other uncertainties, focusing with Martin on the platypus snout. He determined that it was not, as early investigators had assessed, and in dried preserved specimens had suggested, horny and leathery, but cartilage like a pre-nasal structure of a pig. He further fundamental research of the snout revealed a complex nervous system, peripheral sensibility, remarkable touch and functions, are supposed to be able to pick up electric fields. A prominent figure in Sydney, Wilson was wooed back to Britain in 1920 to take up the chair of anatomy at Cambridge University. The fraternity of Duckamoy had changed the face of the scientific monitoring investigation. All collective fellowships of the Royal Society for the contributions, and all rose to prominent positions in British scientific institutions. Most importantly, these new men transferred the major site of monitoring research from Britain and Europe and anchored it in Australia. In doing so, they, as far more than Cudwell, stripped the veil from the monitoring's reproduction and opened early mammalian development to scientific view. Very interesting. And you can see my brain really struggling to understand things. And I'll put these, the review and episode 9 out there, even though episode 9's only 90 minutes. I'll just build up. One of the things I think I have been doing is podcasting too hard and too long, too early. And it's sort of running out of steam. Thanks a lot for listening.
podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.